You're listening to Bison Report Radio.
It's going to be interesting to see how Richmond wants to play this in terms of what he does. If he does want to go out and try to get some immediate help there.
The man, the myth, the legend, Greg Menard, rushing the passer from his right end position as a senior, and I think a legitimate National Defensive Player of the Year candidate.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio from Scout.com. Here's your host, Ryan Burns and Ross Uglum.
And welcome back to another edition of the BisonReport.com radio podcast. This being your breakdown edition as we break down the Bison slaughter that happened out in Cheney, Washington, a 40-13 victory over Eastern Washington. And joining me to get through it, as always, is my co-host and editor, Ross Uglum. Ross, how are you doing today?
I'm well. Just taped appearance on Bison 1660, and now I'm going to talk about a lot of the same stuff with you, so consider me primed. I'm ready to roll.
Awesome. So we have a ready-to-go Ross Uglum, so let's get into it here in the news part. And I guess topic number one, Ross, would be the Nick DeLuca injury. I know that word got out late last week, but then Nick suits up against Eastern Washington. I know you have some theories about that. And then in the press conference on Tuesday, Coach Kleiman says that he just had surgery. So walk me through Nick DeLuca and talk me off the edge of the Bison losing another key asset on that defense.
Well, I mean, it's a meniscus. That's the rumor. The original rumor was torn ACL, done for the season, which just, you know, Kleiman talks about Murphy's Law quite a bit, but that was pretty darn Murphy. To lose him after losing Radins and Menard would have really been a tough blow. But now I think NDSU's facing an opportunity, and that's something that we'll talk about moving forward, because I have a hard time believing that DeLuca is done in an NDSU uniform. I believe that you will see him again, and we will talk about that kind of moving forward.
All right, the other news part that we have to get to here is Robbie Grimsley being named the Missouri Valley Co-Defensive Player of the Week for his play against Eastern Washington. Two interceptions, two passes broken up, and one of those passes broken up on the goal line should have been his third pick. So Robbie Grimsley, I believe the stat now is he has 9 career interceptions. I think we've touted him, or specifically you, Ross, have touted him for many months going on end now. Talk about your boy Grimsley.
Yeah, he's kind of our guy. Somebody who, just because of the sure tacklers that have played before him at the strong safety position, sort of got a bad rap, playing as a true freshman with maybe sort of a high schooler's body and not being strong enough to make some of those sure tackles. He got a bum rap, and even as a freshman was a very good coverage safety. And now that he's put on weight and strength in the Kramer program, he's an acceptable tackler. You add that into the progression that he's made as a playmaker, and he's an All-American level guy. I think you saw that on some of the preseason teams, and boy, oh boy, did you see that against Eastern Washington. He looked like the best player on the defense, and I don't even think that's any kind of exaggeration. Menard gone, DeLuca gone, Trey Dempsey having not a great game. Grimsley was the man. And we will now kick it to this season's very first edition of Recruiting Time with Ryan Burns. Ryan, talk to me.
So I know that Kleiman mentioned in the press conference that obviously with the bye week coming this weekend, that the staff really isn't focusing on other Valley opponents. They're focusing on the recruiting trail. So when you look at where NDSU is at right now, they have 18 verbal public commitments. There may be one or two behind the scenes that are still kind of keeping it a little close to the vest in terms of where they want to be publicly. But in that same respect, I mean, with the bye week here, that means the entire Bison coaching staff can be on the road, and they're going to see all these commits. And, we've linked on the Bison Report some of the early film from these players. Again, the guys that are starting to stand out shouldn't be a surprise. Sabian Clark's early film looks pretty darn good, and there's a reason why he held early offers from Iowa and Iowa State. Trey Lance, his entire Marshall team has been running over the opponents, and Trey himself has been looking like a fantastic athlete. Phoenix Sproles has been putting on a show as well. But, again, 18 verbal commitments right now, and so what they want to get to is that 21, 22, 23 mark. And so some of the guys that they're really going to be focusing on in terms of uncommitted targets, Two offensive linemen worth noting, one by the name of Ronnie Audette, someone I think is the best interior lineman in the state of Minnesota. I've had a chance to watch Ronnie on tape. I've seen Ronnie in person. I mean, I think he can be an absolute road-grading guard or just an interior player at NDSU. He has all sorts of Missouri Valley offers, someone that this Bison staff is going to be pushing for very hard. And the other offensive lineman that this Bison staff is looking at extremely hard is currently committed to another Dakota school. They don't want it out there, or my sources don't want it out there at this current point in time on who that they're trying to flip. But again, this is someone that they're really pushing for hard in the final O-line spot. And then we have to talk about a couple of tight ends, one from Nebraska by the name of Bryce Thigh, someone that's already visited Ben Subbard from Iowa. Both have already visited during the summer, but they haven't really put a rush in terms of on their decision. Then finally, from the great state of Illinois, a defensive back / wide receiver, more of a safety, I believe, to this NDSU staff by the name of Destin Talbert. Now, all five guys have visited NDSU, but they're just kind of waiting to see what happens here in the early part of their senior seasons. They want to see if their early senior tape intrigues any other bigger schools. Now, is that going to happen? Again, crazier things have happened in terms of maybe these kids start to blow up. I think NDSU thinks that they're that quality that they should, but necessarily they won't necessarily do that. So two other names to also keep an eye on this week for offers are Wisconsin defensive back Joe Heffernan, someone from Milwaukee that I know the staff is extremely high on, and then another Iowa tight end / linebacker by the name of Logan Klemp. I believe he has North Dakota, South Dakota State offers. So again, NDSU is trying to see where they're at with some other guys higher on the list. You're looking at Destin Talbert in relationship to Joe Heffernan, and then Bryce Dye and Ben Subbard in terms of with Logan Klemp. So we're going to have to see how they decide to play things out for the remainder of the week, but those are two guys to keep a key eye on in terms of for some buys and offers. And I know that another conversation I've had with a couple of MAC coaches this week is just in relationship to the Bison, you know, primary recruiting area. You're looking at that Nebraska, Iowa, Minnesota, Dakotas, Wisconsin area. And the conversation was very NDSU central, and I didn't intend it to be at first. But I was asking about the reasons why some of the kids in Minnesota and Wisconsin don't get MAC offers. And both of their responses, again, I don't think either of these coaches know each other, was, we know that if NDSU comes in and offers, that they're probably going to get them, and we don't want to be embarrassed on the recruiting trail. And that would be embarrassing to them to lose to a, air quote, FCS D1AA school compared to what they think is the high and mighty MAC. So that's kind of the amount of attention and just the amount of respect that NDSU gets in the Midwest. I mean, Minnesota, Wisconsin, the Dakotas, Iowa, Nebraska – I mean, you don't see MAC schools come in there because they know if NDSU comes in on a kid, which they think is MAC quality, again, they're going to lose to NDSU 8 out of 10 times, 9 out of 10 times. So I just, you know, that's something that, again, I had as a working theory for many years, Ross, but, you know, to hear it from the horse's mouth out of two different horses, I mean, you've been covering NDSU and you've been, you know, an NDSU fan a lot longer than I have. Does that surprise you at all?
Well, no, because of what the brand is around here. You talk about the MAC. NDSU is undefeated against the MAC. In fact, in the mid-2000s, Central Michigan won the MAC, but also lost a home game by 30 to North Dakota State. That's not a brand in NDSU that is going to be intimidated by any lower-level Division I school. They know their place as far as beating Minnesota, beating Wisconsin, beating Iowa for a kid, but they have absolutely no issue going up against NIU, a directional Michigan, anything like that. It doesn't surprise me in the least just because you can sell championships, and frankly, you can sell potential NFL success with as many guys as are in the league now and as high profile, of course, as Wentz is. But, I mean, you turn on Monday Night Football, the late game, and you've got Billy Turner's Broncos taking on Kyle Emanuel's Chargers. And Kyle's a full-time starter. There are plenty of guys making an impact in the league. So I think it's unsurprising that the MAC would not want to really venture into NDSU's recruiting footprint because the guys that can go to the Big Ten are going to the Big Ten, and the guys that don't will generally probably go to North Dakota State or a different Dakota school.
Well, I mean, you even look at it in the 2018 class. Trey Lance had an NIU offer. Riley Moss had I believe Stomach offers. Brian Nohava, the offensive line commit from Iowa, had a Central Michigan offer. You look at Jaden Price. I think he just picked up a Tulane offer, and I believe he also had Stomach offers. And I mean, that's just the guys off the top of my head. It's so funny that they find it embarrassing when, again, I think NDSU is all of the quality of a MAC team, if not better. And for them to just completely abandon a northern region like this just speaks incredible volumes about the amount of respect and the amount of times that they've been beaten by NDSU for a kid. And now they just don't want the embarrassment anymore. So,
well, right. I mean, most of those schools would lose to NDSU by 2 touchdowns on a neutral field.
Well, I mean, we even saw it in let's talk about last week. I mean, South Dakota goes to Bowling Green. And the Fighting Chris Streblers, Chris Strebler puts up 400 yards plus of total offense, and they beat a MAC team. That's why they don't even want to schedule the Missouri Valley in general.
Yeah.
So this shouldn't come as a surprise to really anybody. But let's kind of rotate off of the recruiting time, and let's get into that Nick DeLuca analysis. Again, we kind of touched on it to start the show. So what have you really heard about the injury? You know, what could a timetable be for Nick DeLuca, and what are you expecting here?
Well, it's a meniscus injury. It's a non-ACL, non-PCL, non-MCL injury. It has to do with the meniscus. If it's a full tear, he had surgery. It's a three-month issue. Three-month issue basically means NDSU will have that bye week after, I think it basically is Thanksgiving weekend, and then you'll be right on the edge of whether or not DeLuca gets to play. And he'll either come in, you know, round one, round two of the playoffs, would certainly be ready for any sort of a national championship game. But the type of deal where, yeah, you're talking about Nick DeLuca being able to play again this year. If it's just a little bit of a cleanup and that does happen, you're looking at a 4 to 6 week injury where you miss the bye week, you miss Robert Morris, you miss 2, maybe 3 conference games, but you're there for the big ones. The Youngstown State, certainly I think a game where he could be key would be that matchup in Brookings against USD in November. So they've got a lot of things to look at and frankly, an opportunity to maybe get some younger guys in there, but it'll just depend on what happens after the surgery. And I understand why the staff is playing it close to the vest. I understand why, you know, really what happened didn't become public until the moment that it did on 1660 there with Jeremy. And frankly, I understand why they warmed him up against EWU to, you know, have a little bit of gamesmanship there. But you have to think if it was the full tear, those are very painful injuries. Frankly, a meniscus injury is generally more painful than a torn ACL because you see guys walking off the field with torn ACLs all the time. You have to hope and believe that it's just a little cleanup and that the original injury was overblown a little bit or the initial diagnosis was incorrect and that he'll be, you know, a 4 to 6 to 8 week issue. And if that's the case, I really don't see it having any effect on NDSU's actual win-loss record. And all it'll do is serve to improve their depth.
So who do you think is probably going to fill in that 4 to 6 to 8? I mean, again, we're talking upwards of 3 months. From what you saw on Saturday and just going forward here into the bye, which obviously the coaching staff can make some changes, I mean, how do you see a potential fill-in or a potential couple of guys that you're thinking will fill in for DeLuca?
Well, man, you really would have thought it would have been Plank as much as he played last year. But they moved Dan Marlette, who I think is a Sioux Falls, Washington kid, a very highly thought of recruit out of the state of South Dakota. I do know that, to Mike Linebacker. And in that original configuration where DeLuca was going to be the Will and Plank the Mike, Marlette was going to be the top backup at Mike, and somehow that never changed. He just became the top backup after DeLuca went down and seemed to certainly jump Plank in the depth chart situation for what they were doing against EWU. Now, they were in nickel most of the game, and it's certainly possible that Marlette and Jordheim are the nickel linebacking group. Board played quite a bit, but I just didn't see much of Plank. So I honestly think against a run team, you'll see Plank, and against a pass team, you'll probably see Marlette because sideline to sideline, that kid is extremely athletic. I think probably why they originally had him as an outside linebacker candidate, but with his frame and his progress through Jim Cramer's strength and conditioning program, he's kind of grown into a Mike linebacker.
All right, well, let's take a quick break from a word from our sponsor.
How is it that NODAC insurance agents can answer all of your questions? When you focus on North Dakota, you know more. We don't have to respond to hurricanes in Florida, which makes it easier to respond to hailstorms and fender benders in Fargo. Hi, I'm Ross Other, your NODAC insurance company agent. I'm here in Fargo, which means the answers that give you peace of mind are right in front of you. Answers come easy with NODAC insurance. Call me at 701-532-0891 to get the answers to your insurance questions today.
All right, Ross, let's get into this Eastern Washington slaughter that really was a 40-13 victory for NDSU. This game was 19-10 at halftime, but then 21-3 in the second half in favor of the Bison. And again, what immediately sticks out to me is the way that they were able to run the ball down their throat. 63 rushing attempts for 375 yards, 6 yards a carry, 5 rushing touchdowns. You know, the running game had things going, and then the defense gave Gabe Gubrud all he could handle. So just in domination in all facets of the word, Ross.
It really was. Yes and no. Mostly because if you look, I had a screen cap on Twitter there. 11 minutes and 30 seconds left to go. I believe it was 19-13. So this got ugly, but was sort of the body blows turn into haymakers type thing that we talked about in the preview. But by the end, I mean, if you just look at the final score and you look at the yardage totals, domination's a good way to talk about it. But this was competitive for 33, 34 minutes.
It was, but then just things really just turned the way of the Bison, and that starts with their signal caller, 13 of 20 for 157 yards, only 7 attempts for 7 yards, but he did have a rushing touchdown. Let's talk about Easton Stick. Again, I know that there was a benchmark in terms of passing completion percentage that this staff put, you know, out into the public in terms of what they wanted for Easton Stick. How would you diagnose how he played on Saturday and just through the first two games of the season?
Well, he's at 72% for the season, 65% for this game. 65% is exactly where they wanted him. And if you listen to Kleiman now, I did not go out to Cheney, I'll admit that. But if you listen to Kleiman, those were some really adverse throwing conditions. And I counted at least 2 what I would call drops. You know, so you could have been in that 75% completion percentage range, but that's part of the game. I will say, to hit his benchmark against the number 6 team in the country, though, is very impressive in the weather that he was supposedly dealing with. Again, you can't really see that on film. You can't really know what it was like unless you were there. But if you just pay attention to the kickoff distances and the punting distances when the ball was, you know, headed each direction, it's pretty clear that it was windy out there. And he made some great throws. The near hash to, and I'm talking about this as if you were watching the TV copy, the near hash to the far left sideline throw to Erzendowski was absolutely beautiful and was on a line. Erzendowski just needs to run that route 2 steps further, and then it's a first down. The bomb to Jensen on the run was pretty outstanding. The bomb that was dropped by Erzendowski was an absolute 45-yard dime. I was just very impressed, and this was a new Easton Stick. We talked about this on Monday with Kleiman. This was a little bit more self-preservation than we're used to. A lot of give. The yardage total way down because of some negative runs that he took or sacks that he took, because on the design runs where he kept the ball, he basically got a first down on a 2-yard play and walked into the end zone. So there had to have been some negative runs there. A lot of give and a lot of give on read option. Not something we've historically seen all that much from Stick, specifically when he was a freshman. Loved to keep the ball, loved to move the ball with his own feet. Probably one of the best 2 or 3 athletes on the team. People kind of tend to forget that because he plays QB. But he was giving all day to those running backs. And Kleiman really talked about the opposing strategy being to make him give, because they don't want to deal with Easton Stick in an open field. And they would, you know, prefer that NDSU use a conventional run get the ball in the hands of their, unfortunately for them, very, very talented backs. But this was a more precise stick as far as throwing the ball, and definitely a more selfless stick as far as the option game was concerned. He was giving more than he was keeping, and when he did keep, he got to walk into the end zone, and that's exactly how that play works.
So let's talk a little bit about those running backs and about what's something else you highlighted in your Upon Film Review piece that's on the Beiser Report. I know it's a lot of people's favorite piece of the week. So let's get into it. Bruce Anderson, Lance Dunn, both go for over 100 yards. Both have rushing touchdowns. So are these the two main backs going forward just as we thought? And then a little bit of wishbone mixed in for those folks that may have played in a little bit of a different system in high school. What did you think of the two backs, and what did you think of Wishbone?
Yeah, those two guys are going to be the guys. Talked about that with Kleiman in the press conference as well. Talked about losing their two, and I'm using air quotes for bad radio here, big backs in Frazier and Morlock, and having to replace them with Dunn and Anderson. And he said, actually, these guys are heavier than those two big backs as far as height, weight is concerned, and they're very impressive between the tackles. That was the main concern. Are you going to lose that ability to grind like you had with King Frazier? And it really doesn't seem like they are. I mean, he is incredibly impressive, he being Anderson between the tackles, running with power, and Dunn is very shifty. And they, like Kleiman said, they don't have to really change their calls depending on which back is in there. And they haven't lost the speed just because they've put on the weight. They both are still capable of running the ball outside, but the between the tackles and stuff has not suffered, and that's incredibly important to what NDSU does. That third back now can be Ty Brooks, and that can be more of a change of pace, and I think it is. He's been effective in his role and allows them to use that delta formation or the inverted wishbone. It's a shotgun set with a back on each side and a back behind, one that was made pretty famous by Chase Morlock. His ability to run that wheel route, his ability to lead block, you kind of thought maybe not something we'd see this year. Without a more versatile back, I thought maybe they'd use Brock Robbins a little bit, but Brock I don't think has the threat to actually just run with the football that Morlock did. So they decided to bring it back with these three guys, and now you've got 5'9", 180-pound Ty Brooks out there throwing lead blocks and throwing them effectively. It's very commendable. That's the dirty work, and it's the type of small, seemingly insignificant stuff that wins football games. And Brooks was, again, exceptional in this game, and I think is really going to be a part of this offense as their third option out of the backfield. Maybe a guy that they'll be able to work in the screen game as well as the season progresses. But that delta formation is something they're going to have to tweak. You won't be able to run some of the Morlock stuff out of it, but you can run different stuff. And what it really does, and Kleiman highlighted this, was it keeps the defense vanilla. You can't have a whole bunch of exotic stuff going on defensively with that many threats in the backfield. And frankly, just formationally, that set is so balanced or unbalanced, depending on which way you line up the tight end and the receiver, that you have to have your run fits taken care of. And you can't be bringing guys from all over the place and being super disruptive just because of the design of the formation. It's a very cool set, and they've done a lot of cool things with it.
Before we switch to the defenses out of the ball, Ross, I do want to talk a little bit about the offensive line because, again, this is a Bison offense as a unit that's averaging over 400 yards a game on the ground. This is an offensive line unit that just saw 63 rushing attempts at 6 yards a clip and 5 rushing touchdowns. Again, you see Dylan Radins get out, and again, somebody else just slides right back in, and they keep clicking as a cohesive unit. So the offensive line only giving up 1 sack on 20 passing attempts as well. Again, going against what was the number 6 team in the country, that's pretty good.
It is, and, you know, I lamented the loss of Radins. I love offensive line play. I love breaking it down, watching it. He was a special talent, and he'll be back next year, and that's just something that we're going to have to deal with on this show. But the replacements, if you will, did not disappoint. Colin Connor was a good left tackle last year. You would assume that he'll be better this season, but they're going to want to be able to use him at guard in some situations because of his I guess you talk about length in basketball. We'll call it width in football because of his width. He's an effective guard, and that means they're going to have to use Luke Bacon. I thought Luke Bacon played well. I thought Zach Johnson specifically played really well. And I think the move from center to guard for Austin Kuhnert is pretty outstanding because of his athleticism. Centers do a lot of reach blocks. They do a lot of combo blocks. They don't do a ton of pulling. Guards in NDSU's system are pulling all the time, and he looks like a capable athlete in space. I highlighted one of his pulls on film where he buried 13, must be a safety, buried number 13 at EWU, and something I feel like that kid probably felt towards the end of the third and in the fourth quarters. And the first touchdown to the weak side of the formation there with Dunn, Kuhnert pulled and led and did a very excellent job. And I think the utilization of his athleticism as a big man is going to be a big deal. But Zach Johnson, Luke Bacon, and Kuhnert really stood out to me. And Colin Connor is just as solid as they come, I think.
All right, as we switch to the defensive side of the ball, I mean, we are going to be a little bit nitpicky considering this Bison defense only gave up, was it 13 points against Eastern Washington and just over 200 yards of total offense overall. But let's start with in terms of creating pressure, Ross, especially just from the edge. Only a half sack from this unit. Again, we knew that coming in, no Greg Menard, how are they going to generate pressure? How do you think that they've been through two games and specifically against Eastern Washington in terms of generating pressure from their edge spots?
It hasn't been great. I haven't seen a great pass rush rep, to be honest with you, from just an end versus tackle standpoint. I haven't seen anything on film that's like, oh, okay, this kid might have the juice, and they might have three kids that have the juice, but I haven't seen it yet. And, I think maybe credited with two half sacks against MVSU, the defensive end group, and they were credited with a half sack this week. It was a Tusker brother, and he ran a game. They ran a twist, he and Blake Williams, and they ran a twist and met at the QB. So the only edge half sack from the EWU game actually came on a stunt and came from the interior. As far as bending around the edge or bull rushing, I'm not seeing much, and it remains easily my number one concern for this defense.
The other thing is, I don't think it's much of a concern, but I think it should be for Eastern Washington fans specifically, is Gabe Gubert any good? Because you look at what he did against this Bison defense, 10 of 30, that's 33% completion percentage with two picks, and he only goes 10 for 15 on the ground. I know that you were talking about it the week leading up to Eastern Washington, and I think some folks thought it was a hot take. I don't even think it's a hot take anymore, Ross.
No, it's just kind of a regular take. They've had system QBs, frankly, since I can remember watching them play. Bo Levi Mitchell, Vernon Adams, and then this Gage Gubrud. Maybe it was Bo Baldwin. I don't know. We give a lot of the credit to Cup, Bourne, and Hill for Gubrud's success, but Bo Baldwin oversaw really excellent quarterback play from Levi Mitchell, Adams, and now Gubrud and we'll see what happens with Gubrud, but I think we've already found out. It's not like Levi Mitchell and Adams had these great long NFL careers despite their eye-popping numbers. Maybe it was a system thing, and now the system's gone. I don't know. I think if you're an EWU fan, you have to be really worried about a guy who was in the conversation for FCS Offensive Player of the Year last year, and I'm just not convinced is that much of a plus player for his football team without the Baldwin system and without, three NFL caliber wide receivers. He's been very underwhelming against an unproven secondary at NDSU and a historically bad Big 12 defense at Texas Tech. That's FBS, I understand, and NDSU is the, kind of the beacon of defense for the entire subdivision. But bad is bad, and Gubrud has been bad.
So let's switch to the secondary for the Bison. We got to start with some battles going on in the secondary. I know that we were extremely, specifically you, Ross, were extremely high in the way James Hendricks played in game one. Well, game two was a little bit of a different story for him. How do you think that the whole James Hendricks experience is going back there at safety, and what about the other battles going on?
He wasn't terrible, but he wasn't great. He was easily beaten by a slot receiver on a sluggo route, and it would have been a touchdown if Gubrud wasn't busy getting smashed in the face by the Bison defensive line. But he did not have as good a game as he did against Mississippi Valley State, and he was playing against better athletes. There's no question about that. But you just have to hope that a guy like him, who's either has the athleticism or has just shown more ability to leapfrog so many guys in the program that have more reps than he does in practice at those positions, to be the fifth defensive back straight out of being a quarterback is impressive. So he had to impress somebody somewhere along the line, and you have to hope that the really good play against MBSU was more of a springboard than this was a detriment. He's going to be part of the deal moving forward, mostly because of just how good Robbie Grimsley is down in the slot and all the things that they can do with Grimsley down in the slot. They kind of need the answer to be James Hendricks. So unless he really plays poorly, I still think that's the way NDSU is going to lean, is to actually have Grimsley play nickel.
Speaking of Mr. Grimsley, again, you are probably the biggest Robbie Grimsley supporter I know. Now he, after a game where two more interceptions could have been potentially a third, I'll let you step up on your soapbox for some people who may not have been as high on Robbie Grimsley. Give it your all, Mr. Ugly.
Well, it's not that much of a soapbox moment. It's just a reminder, and the same kind of thing with Easton Stick, too. Wait. At least until a guy's junior year before you decide what he is as a football player. I mean, obviously you could wait till he's a senior, but the shortcomings that Grimsley had as a true freshman and a true sophomore, you know, could pretty easily be written off to just physicality. And it would make sense that, you know, a high school senior coming into a campus with no formal strength training from a university might struggle with size and strength, and that 2 years after that might not struggle with size and strength. The rise of Robbie Grimsley was easily foreseen if you were just paying enough attention and not, you know, kind of doing the old man yells at cloud thing with the TV. I just think he's a star, and this is probably the year where he goes from, you know, being me calling him a star to just being an All-American. And having a whole bunch of writers calling him a star. Just about had the first four interception game in NDSU history with two drops and two picks in this one. Four really would have been incredible. Three, the hat trick would have been something. But I'm honestly curious to see where the kid ends up all time on the school's interception list. Talking about a player with nine career interceptions at this time. I believe Marcus Williams' record is 21, and Grimsley will probably play 12 more games this year and 14 games next year, maybe 15 games next year. He's got 26, 27 attempts to try and find those other 12 interceptions. Be interesting to watch just where he ends up, because his ball skills and his understanding of how football works are pretty elite.
Speaking of another elite defensive back, Trey Dempsey, again, I know from reading through your Upon Film review, Ross, you didn't think he had the greatest of games. Now, we don't exactly have access to the All-22, so we only get the sideline view. But looks like against Robert Morris is a prime bounce-back spot for Mr. Dempsey. How would you assess his play against Eastern Washington?
Well, I do a lot of stuff with Cole Jurek, who is now a contributor at Bison 1660, and apparently on Monday – he said it was the worst game that Trey Dempsey's had in a Bison uniform. I wasn't quite that harsh, but I noticed it too. I saw it on film. He had a bad angle on the 50-yard play. He got beat in coverage a couple of times, and he's usually rock solid. We always talk about his time as a cornerback, presenting man coverage skills that most safeties don't have, and his understanding of the coverages and of the defense now as a fifth-year senior, pretty much providing the zone coverage ability that would come with an All-American free safety. There's a lot to, pay attention to next week when it comes to the entire secondary. Are they going to, use Bridges on the edge? Are they going to use Dom Davis on the edge now that he's healthy? Does that mean that Wimbush plays a bunch of nickel and Hendricks doesn't see the field because they like Grimsley and Dempsey deep? What are they going to do? That is going to be something to pay attention to at Robert Morris, plus just to see how Dempsey bounces back from a game that some are saying, you know, just wasn't his best work. He's an All-American. I frankly think that he'll likely be an NFL prospect. I would pretty much guarantee he will, at the very least, end up in a camp just because of how many bad defensive backs there are in the NFL. They can always be replaced. I just have zero worry about Trey Dempsey. I'm not worried about him whatsoever. I am concerned isn't the right word, but I'm very interested to watch what they do, though, a week from Saturday with their defensive back rotation, because after that, they pretty much have to lock it in. They have to figure out what they want to do in that Valley schedule, and then from that Valley schedule, they'll figure out what they want to do in the playoffs.
So NDSU heading into a bye week here, last thing we'll touch on for today's episode, but they are still ranked number two in the country. They did not hop over James Madison in the coaches poll or the stats top 25 as well. They did get a couple of first place votes, but again, is that really surprising to you considering James Madison is 2-0 as well?
No, it's not surprising. I've got some issues with just how highly James Madison is being considered at this time, and that it's sort of a unanimous thing. It's an obvious thing. Yeah, I understand they beat ECU, but the American Athletic Conference is not good football. I don't think ECU is noticeably better than Eastern Washington. I'll just be interested to see what would happen if James Madison plays NDSU again. I really would. I think Tangway and DeLuca are such special players, and they lost a special player in Greg Menard, but I am not as scared of James Madison as most folks would be, I guess. I don't think they're this clear, immortal squad just because they put it on East Carolina University. We'll see. Moving forward, we'll definitely see if I would have a hard time believing NDSU and James Madison will both make it through the regular season undefeated. I think somebody's going to drop a game, and we'll see what the national perception is after one of these two schools drops a game.
I know that, again, NDSU's on a bye this weekend, but there is a big game coming up, and we talked about it in the pre-production meeting. North Dakota heads to South Dakota, heads to Vermilion to take on the Fighting Chris Streblers. Both are ranked in the top 25. North Dakota, the number 10 team in the country, according to the coaches' poll, and South Dakota's. Before we head on out of here, Raj, what is your prediction for that game in Vermilion?
I'm going to go 31-20, Coyotes.
Interesting, interesting, interesting. All right, so anything else to add before we round it out for today, Mr. Uglum?
I do not. Everybody enjoy the bye week weekend.
Absolutely. So just a programming note, there will be no breakdown edition early next week because there is no game to break down. So Ross and I will be back, I believe, next Thursday to preview Robert Morris. And so if you guys can, please rate and review the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher, whatever podcasting form you found us at. Also, please subscribe to thebisonreport.com. Again, Ross does tremendous work. If you are not reading his Upon Film reviews, you are not catching the game in the fullest capacity that you can. You can become a smarter Bison football fan by doing that. So for Ross, for myself, we thank you guys for listening, and go Bison.